Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, April 26th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the headline, The 17th Christie Clinic Illinois Race Weekend, and they're off. Around 4,000 competitors raced throughout the streets of Champaign on Friday evening during the 5K for the 17th Christie Clinic Illinois Race Weekend, and the fun continued through Saturday with the marathon, half marathon, and more. And continuing with top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. The friends she's been going to lunch with on Tuesdays for 25 years now are joining Liz Brunson for walks around the neighborhood. It's important for Liz, diagnosed with Parkinson's disease last fall, to remain active, and those close to her are offering both encouragement and company. My very dear friends have all been so supportive, Liz said. Dealing with Parkinson's is not fun, but I'm doing okay. For longer than I can remember, Liz has used her camera and her free time to tell stories of our community's kids doing good things, from the field to the stage. Now we have a chance to return the favor. On May 3rd, Liz and friends are participating in the Michael J. Fox Foundation Chicago Run Walk to support Parkinson's research. As of Friday, Liz's team, Champaign's Shaking It for a Cure, had raised nearly $11,615. If you're in a position to chip in, reach out to Liz at 217-369-4914 or visit the team link in this storyline online. The response so far has knocked Liz's socks off. It's not about me, it's about everybody who has been affected by Parkinson's, said Liz, whose photographic pace hasn't slowed a bit. Just this week, she shared photos from high school baseball and softball, YMCA basketball, and Champaign Central's production of Shrek. So many people whose kids I've photographed over the years have donated, and that warms my heart like nothing else. It's just been amazing, and it's much appreciated. And in history, area history, in 1926, Tim Ryan, 46, a Kentucky native, an occasional umbrella mender who has known nothing but the tramp life since childhood, was arrested for prowling on the University of Illinois campus. He told police that his many vagrancy charges result from his years of cooking out every summer and rooming in every winter in Champaign. Though he has never faced criminal charges, he boasts of knowing leading yeggmen, well-known safecrackers and bank bandits, such as Springfield Johnny, Danville Danny, Syracuse Chuck, Shamrock O'Brien, and both Colorado Slim and Junk Slim. In 1976, a sharp drop in the number of reported rapes has sparked a bitter disagreement over what those statistics mean. Figures released by the Chicago Police Department shows that through March 31, 284 women reported being raped, a 228% decrease from the same period last year. A top police official credited increased police patrols with lowering the number of rapes. But a member of Women Against Rape contended only one victim in 10 calls police because of insensitive handling of the cases. In 2011, the businessman and philanthropist Clint Atkins, owner of the Atkins Group, partner in Fox Atkins Development and VersaBuoy International, and the developer of subdivisions and shopping centers in Champaign-Urbana, died at the age of 65. And continuing with local news, Danville Area Community College, titled Board's Integrity Questioned by Supporters of Accused Staff. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. In a packed room where audience members chanted, "Do the right thing," the Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees heard from multiple supporters of employees who are under investigation for potential misappropriation of funds. Former DAC student and resident Rob Witzel referenced the college's former promotion of the values of integrity, respect, honesty, sincerity, fairness, and reasonableness, then said, "From where I sit, DAC's already lost some of that. Accusations are made without evidence. Integrity has already started leaving the campus," he said at Thursday night's meeting, adding that board members' votes on the matter will reflect their and the institution's integrity. He added that if there was actual misconduct with grant funds for the Adult Education Department, more than three people would be under investigation. DAC instructor Stacy Wright said she's concerned and disappointed about the lack of accessibility, transparency, and communication surrounding recent board matters and accusations against Adult Education Dean Terry Goodwin and Carl Bridges, who had been provost and vice president of academic affairs and student services, but had his position changed to assistant to the president for special projects. She and other audience members also voiced concerns about a proposed board policy change, removed from the agenda at the start of the meeting, requiring board members to go through DAC President Randy Fletcher prior to talking to employees and students. Wright said, "All of this is troubling, and the board is giving the impression of decisions being made without appropriate public oversight." Resident Jeff Nardoni said DAC has lost experienced leaders and long-serving employees have been pushed out. Three department heads have been suspended, and Bridges has been removed and relocated to Chicago, he said. Addressing board chair Greg Wolf, Nardoni asked, "Was it your idea or Dr. Fletcher's to have HR offer the only white man of his department an out if he had admitted guilt?" In other business, new student trustee Leonidas Hamza was sworn in. "My motivation and drive are to empower students to become more involved in their community college and local government," he said. "I intend on doing so by leading with virtue, rationality, and commitment to equality." Hamza wants to help the institution I fell in love with maintain stability and clear direction during this time of transition. Hamza, who is a father, said he wants to focus on developing a student government association and ideas for mothers, including child-changing stations in men's and women's restrooms and installing feminine hygiene products in the restrooms. Students also should know about the food pantry, bus passes, and clothing closet on campus, he said. The board also approved the retirement of biology professor Stephanie Lovelace, who will be one of 11 retirees to be recognized at upcoming employee event. By a 5-3 vote, it also approved the college's new mission, vision, core values, and focus areas, along with a new strategic plan that is expected to be acted on by the board next month. Board member Dylan Hahn, who attended the meeting over the phone, said the proposed new core values sounded more like an economic development statement and asked why DAC was shifting away from its previous direction, saying people want answers about it. And in a weekend special, there's an article titled "New Family, Same Suds." Chrisman's historic root beer stand to reopen year-round under new owners. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Chrisman: when you see the big root beer mug on Illinois 1, you know you're approaching a historic Americana drive-in restaurant. While the Chrisman Frostop is not yet open for the season, new owners, Chad David and fiancée Michelle Smith, plan to reopen it soon. They don't have a definitive date, but are hoping to be serving within the next few weeks. It's been a local landmark since the 1950s and had been owned by the Riggin family since around 1960. Tiffany Tarter, a granddaughter of the original owners, said her grandparents passed it down to her dad and aunt, who typically kept the business open between mid to late March, depending on weather, to October. My dad, for health reasons, had to stop working, and for the same reason, my aunt decided that she could no longer work, Tarter said. We put it up for sale at the beginning of December, hoping a local family might buy it and carry on the traditions. Luckily, we sold the first day we had showings to a local family whose son used to work for us. She said David and Smith planned to keep the Frostop name, but they just won't call it Riggin's Frostop. They have been busy making improvements and preparing for their opening, Tarter said. We are excited to see it reopen, to see what things stay the same and what changes as the Frostop starts its new chapter. The family ties for the business will continue, David said. His son Hayden worked at the Frostop for the last 5 years. And two of Smith's children, Lane and Lindsay, also worked there, along with Lane's fiance, Kendall. The seasonal business closed in October, and David said he and his fiance found out in December that the Riggin family was interested in selling. We're just remodeling, David said about next steps. That includes a new roof, gutters, HVAC, flooring, cabinets, countertops, and new fryers and equipment to be installed. We plan on staying open all year because now we have heat, Smith said. She said they plan on keeping the same menu of burgers and other items and also plan to serve pizza, breadsticks, wings, and other food. Car hops will be seasonal. David's family is from the Chrisman area, and Smith has lived there as well. They now live just outside of town, and Smith's daughter goes to Chrisman High School. David works for a power plant in Terre Haute, Indiana. Smith just recently quit her job at North American Lighting at the corporate building in Paris, Illinois, to run the Frostop. They will have mostly family, but also some high school students as staff. The community is excited that the root beer stand will continue to be open. We're getting a lot of positive feedback, David said, adding that when they've been working on the building, they get people stopping, asking them what's happening with the business. David said they didn't want to see it close. He said he and his son had joked that if it ever came up for sale, they should buy it to give him and Smith something to do. And now it's happened. We're pretty excited about it, David said. We think it sounds pretty promising with the people we've talked to and stuff, so we're hoping that it all works out. In other community news, we have an article titled, Road Contractors Call for Increased Downstate Funding. This is by Jana Wiersema, Urbana. The Illinois Policy Institute reported in March 2025 that Champaign County was one of the state's fastest growing counties in 2024, citing data from the U.S. Census Bureau. However, local contractors said that when it comes to hot mix asphalt bid out to private contractors by the Illinois Department of Transportation for use on state roads, District 5, which includes Champaign County, has seen a major drop over the past 2 years. About 500,000 tons in 2024, 300,000 in 2025, and less than 50,000 in 2026. Additionally, Renew Illinois Roads, a site created by the Downstate Infrastructure Awareness and Advancement Fund, stated that one-third of all roads in the Chicago area are graded as fair or poor, compared with nearly 45% downstate. Yes, we need money for roads everywhere, but hey, downstate roads are in worse condition than Chicago, said Roger Driscoll, executive director of the Associated General Contractors of Illinois. Evergreen Roadworks, formerly the Champaign Asphalt Company, hosted a meeting of road contractors, union leaders, and elected officials Friday morning at its Anthony Drive headquarters to discuss lack of funding and lack of work in road construction in District 5 and other downstate areas. Today is the state letting day, and there is an inordinate number of contractors and suppliers and subcontractors here today. And it speaks to the lack of work that we're getting to bid on, said Evergreen President Joe Lamb. State Representative Brandon Schweizer, Republican Danville, and Champaign Mayor Deb Finan were among those in attendance. The event included discussion of the impacts of the Northern Illinois Transit Authority Act, which Governor J.B. Pritzker signed into law in December. The governor's office said that, among other things, the law creates the new agency to replace the Regional Transportation Authority and oversee the Chicago Transit Authority, Metra, and PACE. It provides $1.5 billion annually to stabilize transit systems across Illinois, including downstate operations. It diverts about $860 million annually from the motor fuel sales tax, which would otherwise go to the General Revenue Fund or the Road Fund, with 85% of the diverted funds going to the new agency and 15% to the downstate transit. It diverts interest from the Road Fund and State Construction Account Fund to transit capital, with 90% going to northeastern Illinois and 10% to downstate. This is expected to provide about $200 million in the first year, with annual amounts decreasing as balances are spent down. Kevin Burke III, Executive Vice President of the Illinois Asphalt Pavement Association, said, "While local government's distributions do not come from the road fund or the state construction account, the dispersion from these accounts will have an impact on IDOT projects. However, the governor's budget address did include $500 million for downstate transportation," Burke added. "It's his opinion that if these funds are included in the budget, they should be distributed to local governments through some kind of formula. If we use the federal distribution formula, that kind of splits money out between the urban areas and the rural areas, rough calculation, we'd get about $5 million extra for the year in Champaign County," Burke said, "which is, I think we get about $1.2 million in federal funds in a given portion. So you're talking about a 4x, 5x multiplier." Still, he noted that this would be one-time funding. "We need funding that we can count on so that we can make those investments in the equipment, make the investment in our people," Burke said. "I think it's vital that downstate speaks up about what's going on," Lamb said. Additionally, John Peisker, Vice President of Special Projects at Evergreen, shared a website that industry professionals can use to contact their U.S. senators and representatives to ask for a robust multi-year surface transportation reauthorization bill that sustains and increases highway funding beyond current authorization levels. "This is something that we can do," Peisker said, noting that if the reauthorization bill isn't passed, there won't be a federal match to meet local funds. The site, materialsgrassroots.com/engage, was put together by the National Stone, Sand, and Gravel Association, the National Asphalt Pavement Association, the National Ready Mixed Concrete Association, and the American Cement Association. "By passing this critical reauthorization with meaningful funding increases to keep pace with inflation, rising costs, and growing needs, Congress can prevent project delays, protect our jobs, strengthen supply chains, and continue delivering safer, more efficient infrastructure that grows our economy and supports working families nationwide," stakeholders wrote. Finan agreed that continued advocacy is important. "We really can't accomplish big-scale things without federal and state matching funds," she said. And from the Vermilion County Court, article titled "Danville Woman Convicted of Battery." This is by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. A Danville woman has been convicted of aggravated battery and mob action in a March 2024 attack outside a Danville bar that left several people injured. LaChaka Davis, 50, was found guilty of two counts of aggravated battery, both Class 3 felonies, and a one-count mob action, a Class 4 felony, after a three-day trial. Judge Mark Goodwin set her sentencing hearing for June 18th. Evidence presented at trial showed that about 1 a.m. March 30th, 2024, Danville police were dispatched to a bar in the area of East South Street for a report of a fight. Officers said witnesses told them that Davis had unexpectedly instigated an attack in which at least two victims were kicked and struck multiple times by her and several co-defendants. Assistant State's Attorneys Lane Roberts and Jake Klein, who prosecuted the case, said one of the victims suffered severe injuries that required facial reconstruction surgery. All of Davis's co-defendants have already had their cases resolved. State's attorney, Jacqueline Lacey, thanked the victims for cooperating with police and her office throughout the process. "I hope the victims continue to heal, both physically and mentally," she said. And in our community champagne business, titled Picara Bakery Moving Back Downtown, it will adjoin Martinelli's, owned by the same family. This is by Jana Wersima. Champagne. A bakery that has been part of the city's food scene for more than 20 years is moving back downtown. Picara Bakery and Bistro, currently located at 811 West Springfield Avenue, plans to relocate to 500 North Walnut Street, said co-owner Lauren Brokish. "We are hoping that we'll be over there by the fall," she said. "If everything lines up, potentially toward the end of summer. But we're really hoping more for like September as a move-in date." Some of the highlights of the new location include a safer parking situation and a larger dining room, Brokish said. Additionally, it will be next door to Martinelli's, which is also owned by Brokish and her husband Jeffrey. Brokish said there will be a good synergy between the two businesses, with Picara providing a breakfast and coffee shop option, while Martinelli's is more of a lunch establishment. "We will have a little door between the two so that folks who go into Picara for breakfast and coffee hangouts can then also go next door to shop Martinelli's if they like," she said, adding that Picara will be open 7 days a week. The bakery originally opened at 116 North Neal Street under the ownership of Seika Cook. "We're excited to come back downtown, and it's only 3.5 minutes away. So hopefully our folks that are used to us at the Springfield and Prospect location don't mind coming a little further afield," Brokish said. And continuing with Kathy Reiser's mailbag, a question about the April 11 traffic stop that yielded four subjects, four guns, including an AR-15 style rifle and a universal smart key generator. The News Gazette reported that when police arrived at Hedge Road and Mattis Avenue, where a stolen car was found, an officer saw four subjects getting into an Uber nearby. "But don't ride shares need to be ordered at least a few minutes in advance via app? It seems odd that there just happened to be a ride share driver right where the subjects needed one, at the moment they needed it, at 12:50 in the morning. So, are police investigating whether the ride share driver may have been working with the suspects and might have known what they were up to?" Champaign Police Department Lieutenant Aaron Lack, who oversees CPD's Investigations Division, shared the following by a spokesperson, Joe Lamberson. "The Champaign Police Department continues to investigate all potential leads as part of an ongoing investigation into the circumstances that led up to these arrests on April 11, 2026. Because this remains an active investigation, we are unable to share additional details at this time. Anyone with information related to this case is asked to call Champaign Police at 217-351-4545, and anyone wishing to remain anonymous may also submit tips to Crime Stoppers by phone at 217-373-8477, online at 373tips.com, or through the P3 Tips mobile app. Next question. I live along one of Willard Airport's landing paths, and I could swear there's been more private jet traffic on some recent weekends. What are the typical numbers, and which weekends seem to be busiest for private air traffic here? In a typical week, we see anywhere from 20 to 25 planes, said Flight Star Aviation's Matt Hammer. This can vary depending on special events in Champaign-Urbana, such as football, basketball, and volleyball games, as well as events like this past weekend's Ebert Film Festival. Overall, this is a difficult question to answer precisely due to the number and variety of events taking place in our community. The reader had noted the first weekend of April seemed especially busy for private aircraft and theorized that maybe some U of I alumni were coming back to campus before they ventured to Indianapolis for the U of I men's basketball team's appearance in their NCAA Final Four game. We did not observe any increase in traffic related to the Final Four, Hammer said. Generally, if Indianapolis reaches capacity, flights tend to divert to smaller airports closer to that area rather than ours. And the next one is, what looks like landscape cloth has been suspended from the fence above the CN Viaduct at Windsor and Neal Streets, just flapping in the breeze. What's its purpose? We asked IDOT's Kenzel Garnett if he happened to know, and he said Canadian National Railroad staff told him, we have installed this to keep ballast from falling onto the road when using the ballast plow on the track. Ballast is the coarsely crushed angular stone that stabilizes the railroad track bed. We put it up last week and have struggled with track time to complete the work. We will resecure for the work and remove it when we complete the project. And some lottery vending machines accept cash, but I've had them accept the first dollar bill I fed into the machine, then reject the second bill without giving back the first bill if I don't have another I can try to use. What's up with that? The reader continued, the vending machines have a minimum credit card purchase of $10, and those that take cash only seem to accept mint condition bills. If the machine spits out the second bill that's a little wrinkled, your options are to walk away and forfeit the first dollar or take a $1 scratch-off ticket you don't really want. He said he'd had this experience multiple times at the Schnucks in Savoy. Megan Powers, Illinois State Lottery spokesperson, said she appreciates the reader and the mailbag bringing this to the agency's attention. We had a technician go out to the location you mentioned and replace the bill acceptor on the machine. It is now working properly. We'll take a short break now and return with a second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, April 26, 2026. Please stay tuned.